From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Friday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio this morning. Our guest today, Stephen Godfrey, SB Nation. You've read and watched a good bit with him this week as he gave his closing statement on the Ole Miss Leo Lewis thing, a very long, very researched piece that he completes a lot of coverage over about a five-year period that accompanies the documentary that was released this past week as well. So Godfrey on today's show on the Billy Spokane's Hotline here in a little bit. Also, Ole Miss baseball obviously opening regional play tonight at home against the St. Louis Billikens. That is a 6:30 first pitch. The 2 o'clock game, the Tennessee Tech Golden Eagles and the Missouri State Bears at Swayze Field as well. If you'd like to watch that first game, Dylan Coleman, I assume, is still from Missouri State. He's probably going to pitch in the big league, so he'll give you something to look forward there against a pretty good Tennessee Tech lineup that leads the nation in home runs and batting average. So there's your setup. We'll talk a little baseball. We'll talk to Godfrey. And we'll move you on to your weekend with today's podcast. It's brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford, Blue Sky, and Craddock Oil locations throughout Mississippi, where you can use your Speed Pass Plus. While doing so, you pay on your phone. You don't have to worry about credit card skimmers or identity theft or any of those things that plague people in today's society. Also, you save some money and you're a little more convenient. No reason not to. Where with the Exxon Craddock Oil and Speed Pass Plus. And then, like we said, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
We are Clark Ford's in Amory, 662-257-1900 is the number. Call that number. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. It's just a really easy, convenient, hassle-free way to make a car purchase. So you get your quote, and then it's up to you. You can shop it around, or you can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of our podcast. That's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience, nice and easy. And at the end of your deal, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on this podcast or any of our family of podcasts. There's a bunch of them out today or being put out today. And so you can mention any of them, $500 off your bottom line from your deal at Clark Ford in Amory.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden already out this morning. We spoke to Josh West and Nick Weaver of Blue Delta Jeans yesterday. Went over to their studio. I apologize for a little bit of audio issues, but cleaned it up pretty good. It's not too bad as I was testing it this morning. The sound reverberated a little bit through the room a little more than I would have loved, but it's all right. It is there. They've got a great story, great pop product, and are great people. So just, you know, not even a Billy about jeans or whatever, just an entrepreneurial story that's really interesting, really worth your time, as they have done some cool things in the sports entertainment world, and I think you'll enjoy the half-hour program with them. Also, we found out last night they're giving a deal to all podcast listeners. You mentioned the Oxford Exxon podcast. Probably can mention any podcast, kind of like Clark Ford, but you mentioned the Oxford Exxon podcast, $100 off a pair of bespoke denim through the month of June. I know Father's Day is this month. You could take care of something right there from a gift standpoint. So they don't do discounts like that very often. So take advantage of that this month with Blue Delta.
I don't think they ever do them.
No, I was a little shocked last night, but I do appreciate it.
Yeah, so. I was floored. I kept looking at it going, is that a real account? Is that real?
Somebody got a burner fake one on Blue Delta now. What were you laughing about a minute ago?
Oh, something on the message board. Oh. They were talking about the NBA game last night, and I was giggling at one of the comments. No. It was funny.
So anyway, okay. We'll get to Godfrey before too terribly long. Couple of news and notes, things baseball-related. Tyler Keenan is going to play tonight, the Ole Miss third baseman. Mike Bianco confirmed that yesterday. Still questionable on Gray Kessinger. I'm leaning toward him not playing. Maybe I'm proven wrong in a couple hours. There's been no statement either way, but just – watching body language, reading people that I know pretty well, I don't think he's close to 100%. So we'll see where it goes. But he was trying to test it. He was jogging around the warning track yesterday during practice. And while I didn't notice any considerable limp or anything, it was not at the point where he fully trusted it. He took ground balls for the first time yesterday where it wasn't hit right at him. He actually moved side to side for the first time yesterday. So we'll see. Anthony Servideo would play in his place at shortstop should Gray be out tonight.
I hope I'm wrong because I like watching Gray play. I was there on Sunday when the hamstring went a little bonkers. I have nothing to base this on other than gut feeling and covering athletics for 20 years. I'm going to guess he's available if really needed.
If you
hamstrings
told me,
just don't heal in 4 days. They just don't, Chase. Now, his might be different because we're not all created equal. We have made that clear. There is some genetic athleticism in his DNA that probably makes him a faster healer than me or you. But I watched the play. I was watching him on that play, and he's very fortunate from what I saw that it wasn't worse than probably it was. Because he knew it was a fly out to center field quickly. Gray's played and watched a lot of baseball. I'm sure that he knew the way that the center fielder was settling under Olenek's hit, that the ball was going to be caught, and that the rules of baseball required that he get back to first base.
Was it the first time he's had to go back on a fly ball in his life?
He instinctively knew to get back to first base. His hamstring informed him.
That was going to be a little more complicated than usual.
That this was going to be difficult. And sure enough, he was unable to do it. And several people exposed their complete and utter lack of baseball knowledge in the very quick responses that they put on message boards.
That's kind of rude.
And Twitter, just keeping it real. And so 5 days later, if he's limited, I'm not at all surprised. You don't play with those things either. If it's bad, you've got to let it get better. Otherwise, you'll blow it out.
If you want him hypothetically next week, he needs to chill tonight if he's not healthy.
Look, this team's had some depth all year. This is not the first time they've dealt with Gray Kessinger's hamstring. It's been an issue.
Mid-March.
Yeah, it's been an issue off and on for a little while. Servideo's a very good defensive player. He'll be fine. They get Keenan back. They're probably okay. They should be okay. You have to, in your mind, say, hey, we'd really like to have Kessinger back for next week, and then you'd really like to have him available in the middle of the month if something happens.
Yeah.
So you got to be cool. And he, at the very least, and again, this is going to be my medical experience coming out, at the very least, he really tweaked it the other day.
Yeah, that was the word he kept using over and over and over again was tweak, whatever tweak means.
He felt the tweak and did the smart thing by chilling.
Yeah, I don't think it was as bad as it was in mid-March when he pulled the crap out of it. But
oh, no. He wouldn't have been able to even jog back to first had that been the case. He would have just stood there like he got shot.
Yeah.
When a guy gets – like Wilson Contreras last year when he really pulled his and was out 4 to 6 weeks.
That was it.
I mean, there was no doubting that it was a fairly severe injury.
One leg was the only way he was getting back to the base at that point.
He had to have help.
Yeah.
Gray even came out and played another half inning.
Yeah.
And then I think they realized this
common sense took over.
This is stupid. What are we doing? Yes, this game has a trophy at the end, but no, this game doesn't matter. And I realized it was a really cool moment. Championships are forever. The game that Ole Miss will play tonight is more important than the game that it played on Sunday.
NCAA sent out their annual reminder yesterday that if you tweet play-by-play, you will be removed from the press box during regional play because you're interfering with potential broadcast rights. So, yeah.
Now, who on the beat tweets play-by-play? There are some, right?
Yeah, there's a couple get close. At first, they said it was only one tweet per inning, no matter what it said, but that makes no logical sense. It was play-by-play that they are restricting, which – I think some dude actually got kicked out of a press box a couple years ago for doing it, for tweeting.
Well, you should be kicked out of a press box for doing it no matter what.
You think so?
Yeah, it's awful.
So you're backing the NCAA here?
I'm backing common sense. tweeting play-by-play is just – I mute people who tweet play-by-play.
Strike one. Ball one.
Well, there are people that do it.
Ball two.
It's now 1-2 on Olenek.
Ground ball to short.
Stop. I mean, just – it's not necessary.
What's acceptable?
On Twitter?
Yeah.
Just updates, like on a score, a scoring play. Someone hits
an observation.
That's to me more. I'm more interested in, hey, this pitcher doesn't appear to have command of his off speed stuff so far.
He can't throw glove side today.
He's struggling. It looks like someone had a wrist injury. That wrist appears to really be bothering him still. Watching him between innings, I noticed this, like that kind of thing. And then what I did when I was covering Ole Miss and Hoover was I put those observations in the game thread because people actually pay us for our opinions as opposed to putting it on Twitter where I would then be competing against myself. But there are a lot of people in our field who are so desperate for Twitter followers and Twitter love that they don't understand that when they tweet all that stuff as opposed to doing it on their message boards that they're actually competing against themselves. Either that or they don't care because what they really want is the Twitter adulation because Twitter pays you in a spiritual manner.
A spiritual manner.
Well, they damn sure don't give you money. You ever gotten you've gotten a check from Twitter yet?
No.
You've been on Twitter a while.
I have.
You gotten a check from Twitter?
Nope.
Nope. They sent you anything?
There are a lot of people that will give you checks. Twitter, not one of them.
You gotten a check from Oath now, Yahoo?
Yeah.
They've paid you, right?
Oath paid.
Pretty reliable.
Amazon will pay eventually, I think.
Yeah. You've gotten checks from those people, correct?
I have, yes. Apparently YouTube will pay you too if you have enough people on YouTube.
How about that?
Yeah. Twitter, not so much.
Hadn't got anything from Twitter, right?
They're a little more communist.
Are you anticipating anything from Twitter anytime soon?
The little blue bird doesn't do a whole lot for me. If you care about the SEC whatsoever, you can start watching that at 11 a.m. this morning. Even I'll pray for you a little bit if you start there. Oklahoma at Mississippi State, or Oklahoma and Mississippi State play at 11. Columbia and Florida play at 11.
Where is State?
State is in Tallahassee. With Florida State. St. John's and Vanderbilt play at 11. Auburn and Northeastern play at 1. Ohio State and South Carolina play at 1. Arkansas plays at 2. Anything late? Ole Miss is actually the last game to start 6:30 tonight in the SEC at least. So yeah. LSU plays San Diego State. Indiana plays A&M. Georgia plays Campbell. So all right, there you go. A&M being a 3 seed is one scary freaking 3 seed, by the way.
Yeah,
that's not fair.
No.
I would assume if you could poll Ole Miss players and coaches, they'd rather play Texas than A&M next week.
I would think so. But I would think, given that A&M is better than Texas.
Hey, see, Texas is the 1 seed, Neil. They're the host school. They won the Big 12.
Some of us are not
A&M
hostage.
A&M went 13-17 in the SEC.
Some of us are not hostage to rankings.
Okay.
I know what I saw.
How many Texas games have you watched this season?
I haven't watched any. I know what I saw.
Okay, I'm moving on because this really doesn't matter. But
we're gonna fight about this?
No, we're not fighting about it. I like A&M. They're good. They pitch well. But
they're really good.
If you haven't seen Texas, they're a name program. They won the Big 12. Why the lack of benefit of doubt for the Longhorns?
Because the SEC is better than the Big 12. You and I both know it.
See, now you're doing that SEC football thing that SEC football fans do and go, Kentucky is better than Notre Dame.
See, I don't do it in football, though. I don't do it in football. And I don't do it in basketball, but I do it in baseball because year after year after year after year, it's proven to be accurate.
Okay.
The SEC is a dominant baseball league.
So you always take the 11th place team in the SEC over the first place team in the Big 12.
When they look like Texas A&M, yep.
You were very impressed by the Aggies this week.
Well, let's do this for a minute. They've played 4 games against Ole Miss this year.
They have.
I think Ole Miss is a national title contender.
Okay.
A legitimate national title contender.
Okay.
I do.
Yeah.
They've played 4 games against Ole Miss this year. If I'm correct, all 4 games were decided by 1 run.
I think all but the first one. I think Ole Miss might have blown them out a little bit in the first game. But, yes, three of the ones, I believe that is
correct. They beat Ole Miss by one, lost to Ole Miss by one, where they had people on bases to win the game.
The ball went to the wall and got called or whatever it was.
And then in Hoover, they played a damn masterpiece of a 2-1 game where they had the bases loaded in the eighth, and if they get a hit, they win the game.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really good. They're really good. When you watch them, they pass the eye test.
And have pitching out of their ears.
Yeah, the big tall kid who pitched against Ole Miss, that dude's good now.
Kilkenny.
That dude's good. He was moving the ball up and down, in and out. He was changing speeds.
Hoffman's all eccentric as heck, but he's good on the back end.
Yeah, they threw the heck out of it. They beat the crap out of here we go, Casey Myers and Auburn. What time are we?
Oh, we're at 14. We're a good ways into this.
14 minutes before you mentioned Casey
Myers. See, I didn't even mention Casey Myers when I talked about Auburn a minute ago.
I wanted to make sure we got that in.
Okay.
They beat the hell out of him. Out of them. And Auburn's good. Auburn's a really good team.
Auburn in the Raleigh Regional.
I do. Auburn's a good team. I think they've got to kind of approach their offense a little differently. But, yeah, they're a really good team.
All right, you've seen a good many of these teams, actually. You've watched a good bit of baseball, actually, the last couple of weeks for whatever reason. All right, 1 second. Let's do this before we go to break.
What was my job? People say, why don't you watch it? I'm like, well, because it's not really my job, and Chase does a really good job. But when it becomes my job, I watch it.
All right, Oklahoma and State are the 2 and 3 in Tallahassee. What kind of shot do you give State to get out of Tallahassee?
Man, not much. I mean, I told you this the other day. I said that guy doesn't get enough credit for going 15-15 and getting a 2 seed because they did not look good early in the year. But that's probably too tall of a task.
So you think Florida State or somebody will win that?
My guess is Florida State wins the regional.
Okay. I assume we're both going to say Florida Gators have a really good chance of getting out of Gainesville this weekend.
They're going to play. Yep, they'll win.
They are throwing their number 3 or number 4 against Columbia tonight.
And like I told you, that's smart. Save Singer for the 2, win the game.
Throw Jackson against the whatever and move on with your day.
Jackson throws the Sunday game and you do the little celebration thing and sing the song and get ready for a super regional.
Okay. Yeah, I'm good with there.
They're really good.
Yeah. Vanderbilt and Clemson, give me a bit of a tall order. This Vanderbilt team's a little weird to me. I don't necessarily like their chances.
No, I don't like their chances. I don't really like the way they finished the season.
If I'm Clemson, I don't like Vanderbilt being in my regional, but it's not the scary Vanderbilt team that I'm used to.
Yeah, if I'm Clemson, that's not the team I want to climb out of the loser's bracket and try to beat.
You just never know what the group of prospects looks like.
He might throw some kid in there on Monday that's like, hey, here's the ball, and the kid goes, fun, and goes 97.
They're the most volatile team that could go 2 and out or end up in Omaha, and I go, okay, fine.
Whatever. Well, Vanderbilt's not going to be remotely intimidated by the environment. They're not wired that way.
No. You like Auburn and NC State this weekend?
I mean, I'm not predicting that they'll necessarily win, but if you told me they had a hell of a shot, I agree.
Okay.
When they played 4 games in the SEC tournament against good teams and fared well.
South Carolina, Ohio State in the opener, and then that is in the East Carolina regional.
I love the Gamecocks. I told you that. They finished the season strong. They're good. I like their chances.
The Arkansas Razorbacks are at home against Oral Roberts, Southern Miss, and Dallas Baptist.
They've already won.
They won as soon as Nick Sandlin threw the opener.
And they won as soon as they got the regional in Fayetteville. They are a lot like Ole Miss, Chase. They're really, really, really good at home. Nobody goes up there and just kicks their teeth in. They don't. They're really good at home.
Oregon State has to deal with LSU and San Diego State.
Everybody keeps telling me Oregon State's the best team in the country. I find that difficult to believe.
Well, they've only played 3 top 25 games.
So there's no way to know that.
They played Stanford and beat Stanford 2 out of 3.
Yay. I mean, good for them. LSU played with a lot of confidence there at the end. I mean, Ole Miss kicked their teeth in on Sunday, and they were a little tired, and they kind of waved the white flag and got done, which I thought, frankly, was smart on their part. Because sometimes everybody says ever give up. Sometimes it's best to give up. Move on. LSU had done its work. It had gotten into the tournament. They were rested. They've got a lot of arms. They're playing with a lot of confidence. And they're going to play games in June with LSU on their jerseys, and that does change the game. And I'm totally serious. That is a program that every single freaking year plays better at the end than it does at the beginning, because they play with the swagger because of who their, what their program is and what their history is. And I don't blame them a bit.
Now, they have a certain confidence they take with them into the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, they showed up Sunday to play Ole Miss. Ryan Rollison just closed the door on them. He just slammed the door on them, and then they went, eh. They gave up a couple right away in the top of the seventh, and they said, let's get the hell out of here. We're healthy. Yeah. Kudos to Ole Miss. They're really good. Move on. There'll be a handful in Corvallis.
We've talked about A&M at Texas, obviously. Let me see who's in this regional, because honestly, I don't know.
It's like Indiana.
No. I'm sorry. Georgia. Who is the 2 and the 3 in Athens?
Oh, I don't know.
Hold on.
We didn't talk about them at all.
Duke and Troy are joining Georgia and Athens.
Yeah, I don't know anything about either one. I'm picking Georgia to win its regional.
Yeah, Duke's pretty good. Duke could shock them. I wouldn't be overly stunned. And then the final one with the SEC, obviously St. Louis and Ole Miss. So
I like Ole Miss to win its regional.
My gut tells me Ole Miss wins like a 5-2 game tonight.
That's about right.
Something like that.
That's about what I expect.
You know, the kid leaves one up and Cockrell hits one out of the yard or something, and it just kind of spirals. They don't get to Rollison necessarily, and it's –
No, I think Ole Miss wins.
I know it's probably one of those deals, too, where, I mean, Ole Miss obviously needs to win, but they win a certain way, the regional might even be over, you know, where if you don't have to use Etheridge and Karasi and you can save some arms and different things as you go. So, I don't know, but we'll see. Obviously, plenty of coverage at Rebel Grove of that one, but just running through the regionals there to finish up this portion of the podcast. We're going to go to Godfrey in –
What's your prediction? Not that anyone's going to hold you to it. I'm not. Do you think Ole Miss wins on Sunday, or do you think it goes to Monday?
My gut tells me Sunday if you tell me Ole Miss wins tonight, because I just don't like the pitching depth of any of the other teams in the regional. You know, it's what, look, Tennessee Tech's an offensive team. They pitch it a little better than they get credit for. They're a good team. They've won 48 games.
Sure.
Missouri State, like I said, not going to be intimidated in the slightest. They won the Arkansas Regional. You mentioned Fayetteville. Missouri State went in there and won that regional last year.
Which speaks volumes.
They've been to a Super Regional two out of the last 3 years. They have a program that expects to be here this time of year. Now, in saying that, they've got a lot of pitching injuries. They don't have the pitching depth they've had in previous years, or at least the star power at the top. They've got a first-round pick at shortstop in Jeffrey Ironman. But they're lacking a little. And then the four seed, what Ole Miss got a break here? Everybody talks about, oh, yes, that we have really good teams. They are. They're really good teams in this regional. But this is what Ole Miss saw in Lafayette, too, in 14. When you play the mid-majors, they don't have the depth. They don't have that fifth arm, that sixth arm, that second bullpen arm. And Ole Miss does, even without Woolfolk. So that's the deal here, that if you get to Sunday, even when you get a third starter, a fourth starter for these other teams, if Ole Miss gets to 2-0, I do think this regional's over.
So the one thing I think Ole Miss got out of
– I don't love the Tennessee Tech-Ole Miss matchup with MacArthur on Sunday, but otherwise, yeah, I feel pretty good about it.
The one thing I think Ole Miss got out of – and it's funny you mentioned MacArthur, because I was going to mention him – that they got out of Hoover. Everyone – and I understand why fans are excited about the championship and the dog pile and all that. I do. I'm not making fun of that at all. But I think what they got out of that more than anything – is a bunch of guys, not the top guys, but a bunch of guys down the roster a little got confidence. Bullpen arms. Yeah. MacArthur was really, really, really good on a day that if he's not good, they lose and they get out of there.
Fowler
was terrific. Roth was terrific. The tall right-hander that finished the game on Sunday.
Holston.
He was really good. Etheridge was good. I mean, there's a lot of depth.
And offensively, I mean, Servideo getting those plays. I mean, they, you know, like we said earlier in the week, Kessinger comes out and immediately they hit a ball to Servideo that he has to make a play on. I mean,
yeah, he did really well. Olenek played well at third, probably gave him some confidence there. Jacob Adams.
That's right.
I thought as the week went along, he gave them more than they probably anticipated.
He's one of the better bats by the end of the week.
Yeah, he really had some really strong at-bats near the end of the week. And they're just a really good team. I think they're, like I said, I think they're a national title contender.
Let's go to Stephen Godfrey in a second. For today, I'll tell you, the podcast is brought to you in part by Brandon White at Keys to Dream Travel, completely free service, specializing in Disney World and Disney Cruise Line vacations, taking the stress out of planning, taking care of FastPass, transportation, anything else related to your vacation. You mentioned the podcast, you get a $25 Disney gift card, for booking the vacation. So contact him for a free, no obligation quote. Also can ask about free dining options at Brandon at keystodreamtravel.com or 901-634-8687.
The podcast also brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. 7 South celebrating 10 years of business this season. Try 7 South Tailgating once. You'll never tailgate without them again. Kyle Thornton and the people there, they do a great job. They've been with us for a long time. They'll set up your personal gear if you've got it. If you don't want to bring your personal gear, maybe you're just coming for one game, you don't want to haul all that stuff, or you're flying in or whatever, don't worry. Rent from them. They'll take care of it. No matter how complex or simple you want your tailgate to be, they can take care of all of it. Their customer service, their attention to detail is second to none. 7SouthTailgating.com. Kyle Thornton and the guys there, just get in touch with them, and please tell them you heard about it here on the podcast. A podcast that is brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB is offering one-year CDs, 1.75% annual percentage yield, three-year triple option CDs, paying 2.01% APY. With the three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. And Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often, so be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com.
Now, Stephen Godfrey, SB Nation, Billy's Pecans Hotline.
Stephen, thanks for spending a little time with us here on the podcast. I know it's been a crazy week, and in many ways it's been kind of a crazy 5 years. I'll start here.
Yes, sir.
When you look back on all of this time, all of the amount of work, the interviews, the phone calls, the on-the-record conversations, the off-the-record conversations, everything, when you look back, was it worth it? Or if you had it to do over again, would you do it again? How tired of this story are you?
I'm pretty tired of the story, and I'm not a fan of the stress it puts on you as you go through and do the work, but yeah, I would do it again. You don't make a decision like that based on the outcome of the actual news. It's whether or not you feel like you were able to tell the story that you wanted to. And, I feel like I got as close as I could. I don't know if it's ever going to be 100% done, but, I think so. Ask me again in a month.
I've had people ask me, why did Stephen put this much time and energy and effort into this story? And and I think I know the answer, but I'm not going to put it into your mouth. I'll hear your answer and then I'll tell you what I thought. When someone asks you, why did you do this? Why did you put so much effort? You have so much access to so many different programs. You do such a good job covering all the things that you cover. Why did this story captivate you as much as it did?
Thanks, first of all. It's disingenuous to say that we set out on a five-year plan. It wasn't that at all. It was really a bunch of events that felt unconnected or disconnected at the time that ended up painting a larger picture. And what I mean by that was we at SB Nation have always been interested and adamant about kind of watching the watchmen when it comes to the NCAA. And talking about college football in honest terms and college sports in honest terms. And you got with the Bagman piece a long time ago now, 2014. And, you know, the way that story came together was where we talked to three individuals that represented three different programs in the Southeastern Conference, and the attention it garnered, positive, negative, whatever, in different circles, sort of that became a beat. And I think a lot of people thought it was like a scandal beat or a corruption beat or something like that, Neil. But really, it was just I just wanted to talk about the things that no one else was acknowledging. And I wanted to talk about the reality of how the machine is built and how the machine is maintained in something like the SEC and these individual cultures inside the conference. And then from there, there's the news about the investigation initially. You go through that. There's draft night, right? Then there's kind of the Lewis arc of the story. And really, before we got to Leo Lewis, I thought it was done. I thought they were individual stories, I guess is what I'm trying to say. After draft night, I wrote this in the piece that's out right now. I kind of packed it up. We wrote a piece on Laramie Tunsil and what we think happened and what sources had told us had happened in terms of the hack and how this factored into the NCAA's investigation. And I kind of wiped my hands of it. I think I probably was on your show saying something to that effect, however long ago that was. And in the fall of that year, that would have been 16, right, Neil? Yeah.
Yeah, 2016.
In 2016, I started to get phone calls. You know, I wrote about this in the first person in the story because I didn't really know any other way I could bridge all these things together and sort of explain what it was like to do this, but then just saying exactly how it happened. I started to get phone calls saying, hey, the NCAA is out to get Ole Miss, and this is from Ole Miss people.
Yeah.
And I laughed in their faces. I think you know as well as I do what the Ole Miss culture, really consists of, and there's a lot of hyperbole and a lot of ego and a lot of hubris, and based on the behavioral pattern of Hugh Freeze at the time and the people around Hugh Freeze, my first assumption was that they were fabricating this thing whole cloth. There was no one out to get them. They had done a really, really poor job maintaining their program. Tunsil was a sloppy recruitment. They were going to get hit and maybe slapped, metaphorically by the NCAA, but that was going to be it. And whatever was going to come in terms of a big hit was going to come from that draft night stuff. That's what everyone thought after draft night. And they kept saying, no, the NCAA is out to get us. Mississippi State is involved and they're talking to Mississippi State players. And it was three or four phone calls that I took over the course of maybe, 2 months where I just laughed. I was working on other things. I don't cover either program. I'm a beat writer. I didn't want to be bothered, to be totally honest. And, it was around the fourth or fifth time I spoke to somebody and I realized that there was some truth to this. There were some legs to that. And, it was funny is even as I called around, I thought, man, this just doesn't seem right. Because Neil, you remember, I went and talked to the NCAA enforcement, just had an open conversation with them and said, look, everyone in the world is focused on this Ole Miss thing because of what happened to Laramie Tunsil on draft night. And I walked away from all those meetings so convinced of the post-Miami culture in NCAA enforcement. And so when that second NOA dropped, that's when I think it really becomes the story that it is. And that's not to excuse Ole Miss for anything that they did on the front or the back end of this and the all of the violations and things that went on at Ole Miss, starting from Houston Nutt and going forward. It's just that I feel like it became the story that it is, the moment the NCAA, basically decided, hey, we're going to have to fudge some stuff. We're going to have to hide some stuff. We're going to have to do exactly what we're telling everyone in America that we're not doing. And that's really the crux of the thing.
I've never told the story on this podcast. I'll share it with you now because it jives a little bit with what you're saying. It was the summer of 16, and I was in Atlanta for a rivals convention, and they had the five star challenge thingy, and all of that was there. I remember because it was the year the Cubs won the World Series. The Cubs were in Atlanta. And so I went, and it was a day that the convention was wrapping up. The five-star challenge was like the next day. The Cubs were playing that night, and I was going to Turner Field to see the game. And one of the guest speakers, I'm not going to use names, one of the guest speakers was an NCAA guy. And he wanted to talk to me. He knew I covered Ole Miss, and he wanted to talk to me. And I talked to him. And the conversation was one-sided. It was him talking. I just sat there and looked at him because I told him right off the bat, look, I'm not getting involved in this story, and I'm just not doing it. I'm not getting involved at all. That's not my job. If you want to talk on the record, hey, I'll turn my recorder on,
but if you just want to talk, I'll have a conversation. And the conversation was very one-sided. And what I remember walking away from that conversation thinking, man, they want Ole Miss bad. They want Hugh Freeze bad. They want Ole Miss bad. And they're not going to stop until they get him. And right. Later that year, to dovetail with what you're saying, Chase and I have told this story numerous times on the podcast, that December of that year, we got information from someone connected to the NCAA loosely that it was going to be bad. They were going to get a 2-year bowl ban. They were going to get Freeze. They were trying to get a show cause. It was all of those things. And the majority of that obviously has come to fruition. You've covered this for 5 years. A lot of people ask this question. I'm sure they've asked it of you. I'll ask it because now you've covered it as intently, as in-depth as it can be covered. There's really nothing left to dig at, in my opinion. Why do you think, now that it's over, why do you think the NCAA wanted Ole Miss and wanted Hugh Freeze as badly as it did?
Well, I think when you're in the NCAA, you have to justify, it's a famous Andy Kennedy quote, you have to justify your existence. And what Ole Miss provided the NCAA was something that I don't know has ever, it may never be replicated again, has never happened in the history of the NCAA, which was a bright and shining neon sign shaped like a middle finger from a mid-major program in a Power Five that had absolutely no national relevance in the modern age of college football, okay, since desegregation. And you have this program with as publicly facing a human being as you could create in Hugh Freeze, someone who lives and dies on social media, someone who is proselytizing literally on a daily basis, simultaneously upending the balance of order, let's say, in the Southeastern Conference and beyond, right? But he's also pissing off people at Clemson. He's pissing off people at Michigan. This was the brightest, best-looking, and easiest-to-hit bullseye in the history of the NCAA playing police, okay? And the thing I always have to be – the thing I have to be really careful about it is this. I think there are a couple phases to this story, and they have to stand together, but they're of independent value. And what I mean is this. I think, based off of everything that I've worked on this story, that the NCAA compromised its ethics, its bylaws, and they also hid information on purpose. I think they obfuscated the truth, and I think they struck a deal specifically so they could find a hammer to nail Ole Miss. Okay? However, if someone puts a gun to my head and said, is Ole Miss cheating, and was Ole Miss cheating? The answer is yes. The answer is hell yes. Okay? And the real answer, the better answer, Neil, is they weren't doing it well.
No, they were sloppy. They were sloppy.
They deserved the NCAA to come to campus. And the one thing I want to make crystal clear to anybody listening to this is just because the cops showed up and they got in cahoots, okay, with a character witness who has all the motivation in the world to say bad things about you, doesn't mean you didn't commit the crime up front. I'm not talking about Lewis, but everything to do with Tunsil. Everything that got them there. Everything that happened under Houston Nutt. All of that's real. The NCAA, I mean, it's funny because critics of Ole Miss and people who run fan sites and people who have a partisan interest in this against Ole Miss, well, they always want to talk about, well, look, the NCAA found this credible, they found this credible. They also found out that Houston Nutt was really dumb and ran a sloppy program, okay? They found out that Remy Tunsil got loaner cars, and, you know, everyone always wants to clutch the pearls and talk about sleeping on the couch, but, you know, Lindsey Miller got a couple $100, and no one solved the Lindsey Miller problem. Ole Miss is guilty of sin. Ole Miss is guilty of running a very, very sloppy program. And what you find in sloppiness is arrogance. And I think that's what infuriates fans of other schools, and that's why the Egg Bowl rivalry became so ridiculously, you know, intense here for these last couple years, is that it's one thing to lose, and it's one thing to get your ass kicked, and it's one thing for AJ Brown to sign, and it's one thing. But when you have someone who's smirking in your face, who's quoting scripture while he's doing it. This is the, you know, the center will not hold. That's never going to happen. There's a balance to everything. And I know a lot of people want to be angry at Mississippi State, but let me tell you something. They made every right move in this. Every tactical move, every choice you could have made in this, they made the right one because they found a great accomplice in the NCAA, okay? They found a way to pay a player. Now, let this sink in. They found a way to pay a player the exact same way, the exact same way that the other rival schools were, and get away with it. I know people want to be angry about that, but you shouldn't be. You should just take notes and remember it for next time. That's it. You lost this one.
Because there will be a next time. Make no mistake.
The next time is right now. The next time is tomorrow and the next day, and it's every day at every major institution in college football. Period. Full stop.
If Hugh Freeze,
a lot of people want to be angry at Ole Miss, or I'm sorry, a lot of people at Ole Miss want to be angry at the outside world or Mississippi State or this person or whatever, be it Steve Robertson or be it Dan Mullen. But the bottom line is this: Ole Miss allowed these things to happen. And in some cases, sort of dared the world to come after them, and then they didn't even build a fence to protect themselves.
Take a break in our talk with Stephen and tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga, 30 years old this year, and all underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting that understands your market, a leader in condo financing, and the float-down option where you lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get that lower rate. You can find Jason at 662-234-2704 or JLO, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com.
Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. Grenada Nissan is located just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. I've shopped with Grenada Nissan numerous times. Never had anything but a wonderful experience. They have great lease deals as well. Go in. Tell Gene and Sandy that you heard about Grenada Nissan here on the podcast at rebelgrove.com. You'll get rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than 4 decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than he does. Go to his site, HarryAlexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab, filter through by what you are looking for, what you're interested in, and those results are updated daily. And at that point, send him an email. He'll take care of the rest, ha@harryalexander.com. Now back to Stephen Godfrey on the Billy's Pecans Hotline on the Oxford Exxon podcast.
If Hugh Freeze had just been a football coach, if he'd gotten off Twitter or been on Twitter like most coaches are on Twitter where they just tweet about their program and they congratulate the golf program or whatnot. You know what I mean?
Right.
If Hugh Freeze had just been a football coach who had a Twitter account and not tweeted about religion and talked about how his program was different than others and they recruited a different kid and all the crap that he did, all the utter BS that he did, would this have happened? In other words, would Ole Miss have had he signed Robert Kimdichie and signed Laramie Tunsil and signed Laquan Treadwell and later Greg Little and all of the people that got people upset? Had he done that, yet always just been a football coach, not done the Twitter stuff, not done the religion stuff, not become a guest speaker at the Pine Lake Baptist Church or whatnot? Had he done that, would this have happened still?
Well, the Pine Lake thing. As someone who I finished high school in Rankin County, I gotta be careful because Pine Lake will get you. You know, they're out there. They're listening.
Hey, Pine Lake. I use them as just a random example.
No, but here's the deal. I don't have any issue with you. You know, I wrote when Hugh Freeze got fired that he basically co-opted his faith to the point that other people, including myself, who basically hold the same Judeo-Christian values, began to doubt. Doubt the authenticity of his faith because he'd like weaponized it, you know, to at least in terms of football recruiting. And so I think he could have been, look, Gus Malzahn exists and he's a totally acceptable human being in most coaching circles. Neil, I can tell you that what we ran at SB Nation was nowhere near, not it wasn't even 15 to 20% of the things that I was heard, and people were willing to volunteer about the Freeze administration, about Ole Miss, about their arrogance, and about their sloppiness. There was no shortage of people who wanted to line up and kick Ole Miss in the ass. Now, I was asked today on a different show, was it that they wanted to come after Ole Miss? Did they want to come after Hugh Freeze? At a certain point, things become part and parcel. I think there's a friend of mine who works in Mississippi State Beach. He made a good point. He just asked me, he said, why the tactical maneuver? Why double down, triple down, quadruple down on Freeze throughout the different stages of the investigation? And I think it really speaks back to the hubris and the ego that is the University of Mississippi. I think it speaks back to the attitude, but also I don't know if anybody ever had the clout to fire a man who beat Alabama back-to-back years. I don't think it was possible. I think Ross Bjork would have been run out on a rail. I mean, you see the situation with Jeffrey Vitter, right? Equity is not something easily attained, and those who hand it out at the University of Mississippi community usually do so for the wrong reasons to the wrong people. I didn't answer your question, though. I think that if Hugh Freeze, someone else in the Mississippi media said this to me as I was going through legal review on this story. I was trying to make it all make sense to someone who lives in Iowa or doesn't care about college football or whatever, right? And they summed it up really, really well. And they said, just imagine, I think if the phone records are right from the Mars deal, it's Brett McMurphy, formerly of ESPN, that called first back in January of 16, the night that everyone at Ole Miss lied to everyone, you and me, a bunch of my national colleagues, right? We all ran basically the same story.
Yeah.
So imagine, I think it was McMurphy he gets to first. So imagine instead of saying what he did and then the university backing it up, because I put in the piece, like I had multiple sources. This wasn't just one person in the athletic administration building. This wasn't just one coach. This was a chorus. Imagine if they had made a different decision and said, done what 90% of the college programs that I deal with would do, which is they would call me on the phone as a reporter and they would say, hey, look, we got this. We can't comment on anything yet. We're still kind of figuring this out. We'll call you when we have a statement. And I'd say, cool. So imagine if they go that route. And rather than try and play the offensive, not realizing that if you lie to us now, you lose us forever, which they did.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes, no question.
And also if you lie to us now, it's going to come out anyway. Because these are matters of public record.
Yeah, because what's in the letter is in the letter.
Well, in the NCAA, look, as much as it's very tough as someone who's read, I think it's like upwards of 1,000 pages last year of all the different responses, the individual parties involved in the NCAA case, the university, the individual coaches, their representation, enforcement, all of that. I read everything I could get my hands on. I obviously had things I got my hands on no one else did. But it's hard to figure out. My general opinion is that no one's argument is wholly accurate. But I don't think that the NCAA is lying when they say that, hey, we gave them this NOA on this date, right? And then days later, they all lie and say, we haven't seen it, we don't know, but we've heard this, right? And, like, I'll be honest with you, as a national reporter, the one thing that, like, I've had people on Twitter, social media, you know, even a couple of national colleagues who want to try and throw salt, they ask, would you do it again? They always want to frame it around me being an alumnus, as if I'm the guy driving around, like, yelling hotty toddy. And I would say, look, you know, when you get to the fourth or fifth person independently and they all say the same thing, yeah, you run it. That's how it happens. But imagine if they didn't do that, Neil.
Yeah.
I don't think it matters if he's at Pine Lake if he just doesn't decide to go with that tactic or the university doesn't decide to go with that tactic or whoever authored that strategy, which is so ill-advised and has such a long tail that it's living now. If people ask me now my opinion or whatever, and I get that inside the state of Mississippi, I'm always going to be considered part of one side of this, or I'm always going to be partisan, or I'm part of some rebel agenda. I wish I'd get a check from the rebel agenda, by the way. Did you get your check from the rebel agenda yet?
I've yet to get it.
I could use it.
Yeah.
So I have a mortgage in Nashville. I'm down for that Rebel Agenda check. If they actually want to send me a check, we'll talk. I think the equity at the University of Mississippi, and I dealt with them a lot right up until the point that the story has come out, and I haven't heard anything since. I don't expect to. That's kind of how this thing works. I made a decision to tell the absolute truth and hold on to things that I knew to be true throughout the process of reporting NOA to the Committee on Infractions and everything else. We made a decision at SB Nation to tell the story as thoroughly as possible to this point. And at this point, the story, if you don't listen to me as an alumnus of the university, someone who's been accused of carrying water, when I say that they lied and that they are liars and that they were so far in over their head compared to so many other actual major national powers in college football, I don't know who else can tell you that and you believe it. Because I'm supposed to be the one carrying their water.
Yeah, it was the one thing that I always told you that I was kind of concerned for your sake is that even though I know it's utter BS, I knew the fact that you were an alum was always going to be used against you almost by both sides, by the side that the Ole Miss people because they expected favors, and by the outside people because they were going to disregard anything that you wrote and just play the alumni card, which I always say there's no such thing as...
Neil, you're never a prophet in your own land.
Yeah.
Okay. You're never a prophet in your own land.
So let me ask you this.
It's just gobsmacking how naive some of the individuals associated with this university are. They think because I got a journalism degree there over 10 years ago, 10 years is a generous, makes me sound a little younger, that I'm going to somehow be party to this after a whole round of us were embarrassed back in January of 16, that I would keep going on and signing up for this newsletter. No.
You were not in Covington. You talked to people who were. I was in Covington. I talked to people who were in Covington. You and I probably were not. We're both enough professionals that we're never going to compare sources, but I suspect we've talked to a lot of the same people. The deal in Covington, for the most part, if it were in a normal courtroom, most observers would have said it went Ole Miss's way. Leo Lewis did not present himself well. The NCAA investigators in the case did not acquit themselves well as it pertained to Leo Lewis, as it pertained to how Lewis got paid by Mississippi State, how they justified that payment, those type of things. Here's my question.
Sure.
It's a twofold question. One, why, in your opinion, did that testimony that day, for lack of a better word, not have more of an impact with the Committee on Infractions? And then two, and this is a harder question to answer, you're a national media member. There are other members of the national media that I have a lot of respect for, Andy Staples, Mark Schlabaugh, some others. There are some other members of the national media that I'm not crazy about. It doesn't really matter names. Why did that particular story that you wrote about what happened in Covington, I wrote some things about what happened in Covington, why did that particular story never gain any traction at all in the national media?
I have no idea. But I also know this. I'm not an agent of change. I'm not some. When you work in the media and you think that you're going to affect change, you're foolish. You're naive. That is journalism 101 stuff. I've long since given up. I am not here to be an advocate. I am not here to be a partisan. So for me, you notice when the national conversation in your on your beat or like the sport you cover or maybe it's a particular story like this. I think you can't help but notice if you do or don't change or move the conversation based on your reporting. I have no earthly idea why, but I also know this. I think there's a fatigue factor in December. I think it's the story becomes incredibly granular. As someone who just had to write 11,000 words, I can tell you, like, it's not something that you brisk through. It's not a breeze through. It's not something that's very linear. There's so many mitigating factors, Neil, and there's so many people involved. I think it all added up. The day that we released the story about what happened in Covington, You know, I think Jimbo Fisher had been hired by Texas A&M, or he left FSU. Or I can't even remember the line of events, but I remember there were two or three major coaching changes within a six-hour window of me releasing the story. And, you know, that stuff's going to dominate. I know that. I'm fine with that. You know, people ask me, why didn't so-and-so report it? Or you know, it's my favorite one is that they told me that what I reported from Covington was wrong. If it was wrong, we'd be on the healthy end of a lawsuit right now. We know it's not wrong. Why people choose not to report it, I don't know. I don't really care either.
Why did the COI not take it into consideration, in your opinion?
I think the COI, based off the language of their decision, I think the actual Committee on Infractions hearing what occurred in Covington was ornamental. I think it was a
formality.
Formality. It's procedure, and it was procedural. I think the sheer number of allegations against Ole Miss meant that they were going to create a larger decision regardless. I don't think that they were there to parse through allegation by allegation. I don't think that was even I don't think that was the tactic by university counsel. Based off of the reaction from people inside of Ole Miss after Covington and then after December 1st, to use a, like, kind of use sports metaphors, I think they just realized we wasted our time game planning the thing was rigged. And rigged is a strong word, but I think they were going to arrive at a decision regardless, and it didn't really matter how much information the university could put up to show conflicts of interest, to show conflicts in, I always shy away from using the word testimony, but conflicts in the statements that were given, the statements that were heard. I mean, the NCAA has the ability to reject pieces of information submitted outright. So in essence, they're going to choose what they want to hear in terms of things that were submitted. You know, the testimony of Armani Linton basically held no weight. They decided they didn't believe it. They didn't really have to ever account for the fact that they knew that Lewis took money from the Green family. They knew that they used a member of the Green family, his teammate at Mississippi State, to corroborate his own statement. They didn't really have to show their work. That's not how this works in the NCAA. It's not real court. It's not real cops. No due process. And so if you don't have to do those things procedurally, you're not going to. They wanted to arrive at a certain point, and they did.
You mentioned Leo Lewis. You talked about this in your story. I thought it was one of the more compelling things, and you and I have talked about this between the two of us a number of times in the last few years. In the end, and I understand the Ole Miss fans who want to vilify Leo Lewis. I understand the Mississippi State fans who blindly support him. At the end of the day, he's going to finish his college career. He's either going to become a pro or he's not. He's going to play pro ball for a little while or he won't. Yet the rebel rags portion of this doesn't appear to be going away. There's right. A very real chance that at the end of this entire thing, Leo Lewis, who I think both of us believe has been used as a pawn, is going to end up paying the price here in the event that this goes to a civil court and a judgment is rendered in favor of rebel rags, which is certainly possible. Leo Lewis could be paying for this years from now.
Well, I think if everybody, if it's possible, I know that like the majority of the people listening to this, if not every single person listening to this, is either an Ole Miss fan or a Mississippi State fan doing a little freelancing on the other side. And I get that. But if you can for a second put down your partisan interest in terms of like the actual sport and the team and the colors and all that, the NCAA stated mission time and time and time again is to protect the student athlete, which is a term they coined to get out of workman's comp, by the way. It's not a real term. Over and over and over and over again, I've been told that by the NCAA, the VPs and the higher-ups and the foot soldiers and the people who would have a beer with me off the record and all that stuff was, we want to protect the student-athlete. We want to protect the student-athlete. And so I know Ole Miss fans are mad because they're on probation right now and they don't get to go to a bowl or whatever, right? Or the Shea Patterson transferred or whatever. Right? I get all that. I know Mississippi State fans are really, really mad because they feel that, you know, they think Ole Miss should have been SMU'd, which is, by the way, never going to happen to any school ever again. It's too much money at stake. the bottom line is this. The only person now that stands to truly be hurt by this is a student athlete. And the reason why is that he was cajoled by the NCAA and or possibly forced. We don't know because we can't talk to Leo. He was either cajoled or made, flat out directed to do this. And we don't know. But he's the one, because he spoke and he cooperated with the NCAA and was given immunity, who now faces, he's the only one facing a penalty from all of this. Because if you take nothing else from this, understand that the NCAA and their stated mission is a farce. This is a business structure that yields billions of dollars, and they have to protect that business model. Do you know why you can rape girls on campus and not receive an NCAA violation? Do you know why? Do you know why Penn State had all of their sanctions basically thrown out? Because little boys were sexually abused on campus by a football coach? Because that doesn't affect the business model. There's no money lost in sexual assault, period. That's why they can't touch Baylor. But the moment a kid takes $600, whether you like that football team or not, watch out. Because when you start affecting the money, that's when the police show up. That's when the NCAA cop kicking it into gear.
That's why I loved your lead when you said it's all about the T-shirts. Don't forget the T-shirts. Final
5 years, Neil.
Final thing, you've spent 5 years on this. When you look back on this years from now, what's the one thing you'll take from this story? What's the one major thing that you walk away from this story saying this is the moral of the story? You might have just touched it, but is that it?
The moral of the story is this. I don't care what fan you are. I don't care what you think of the media. I don't care what you think of your rival. Everyone is lying all the time, and they always will.
Steven, appreciate your time, man. Have a great weekend.
Yes, sir.
Thanks to Steven for joining us. I know he's had a busy week, but hopefully you enjoyed that. We'll tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, 662-607-7773. MasterCutsLawn.com, sign an annual contract, get taken care of all year long, whether it's needing some spray to kill some weeds, to get some aeration, or plenty of other things they can help you out. Again, 662-607-7773.
Stephen Godfrey and all other guests join us on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Billy's Pecans, you got to try the spicy pecans, the toasted pecans. They've got everything that you can want. The product is fantastic. The cinnamon spice pecans, my personal favorite, is just the plain toasted, but I love the cinnamon spice as well. Milk chocolate, dark chocolate, white chocolate, chocolate amaretto, chocolate Grand Marnier, sugar-free, and more, all at Billy's Pecans. Let them handle your corporate gifting from 5 to 5,000 orders. They can take care of you. It's billyspecans.com, or you can give them a call, 1-800-624-7404. The podcast is also brought to you by Gambrell and Associates. Gambrell and Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their site, msbnkr.com, or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Super Lawyers only selects the top 5% of lawyers in the state, so you know you're getting a great one when you get Robert Gambrell. Robert Gambrell and Associates handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando at 662-342-7700 or in Oxford at 662-281-8800. And the podcast is brought to you by Lauren Valick Ferris with Briggs Freeman Sotheby's in the Dallas DFW Metroplex area. She specializes in East Dallas. She has a network that extends throughout the Metroplex. She's consistently ranked as a top agent producer in D Magazine, was recently named a 2017 Advocate Top 10 Realtor in the Lakewood East Dallas area. So whether you're moving home, buying, selling, or referring a friend in one of the hottest housing and job markets in the country, You need a realtor who knows the town. So call Lauren, 469-867-1734, or go to her site, laurenandkelly.com.
Podcast also brought to you by Tyson Drugs. TysonDrugs.com is the website. Give them a call at 662-252-2321. They have a great app to help you out as well, and forms online. You don't even have to call. You fill out the forms, give them your doctor's name, the prescription ready, and deliver it wherever you are. They're also in Oxford at G&M Pharmacy on South Lamar with local delivery and great hometown service. Russell has a camp preview up at rebelgrove.com this morning as camp season is upon us for those recruitniks out there. Also, I took a look this morning at the legacy of Ernie LaBarge. He was the face of the Ole Miss Bullpen Club when Mike Bianco took over in June of 2000. There were 38 or 39 members at that time. A club that got started in the early 80s under Jake Gibbs, but had fallen on pretty tough times during the Pat Harrison era. And via Ernie's leadership has grown to the largest bullpen club in the nation. So looking at his legacy, he died 10 years ago this year. Ole Miss doing another, obviously, stadium expansion that's almost done. And winning at a high level. So talk to Mike Bianco and others about that. He gave some memories and thoughts on Ernie that you can read at rebelgrove.com. So.
I think it's easy for people to forget where this program was before Mike Bianco because Mike's been here so long. I mean, it's very easy and understandable that you sort of take it for granted. This program, days like the one that Ole Miss will have tonight, man, I got to tell you, not even the biggest red and blue homers around thought could conceive this back then. And that's not hyperbolic. It was an average on a good day, inconsistent program pre-Mike Bianco. They had some moments, yes, but they were never a consistent threat. Mike has made this program a incredibly consistent NCAA participant, and he's been able to put together some elite teams over the years that really no one before him ever accomplished.
Well, you know, Ole Miss went to Omaha four times through 1972, and then after that, I think they went to the postseason twice. Three times, maybe, before Mike Bianco. Three. 99, 94, 77. And even then, though, it was, hey, you're trying to win, but stay in the ballpark of what LSU was building with Skip Bertman, what State was building with Ron Polk, what was happening in other parts of the country. I mean, you know, Frazier at Miami and so on and so on, Dedoe at USC. And Ole Miss is going to host games tonight. It's going to be 16 regionals. And they're going to have the liveliest atmosphere and the largest crowd in the country tonight. There's going to be 16 stadiums still hosting. And they're going to have the best atmosphere. LSU's not at home. They're at Oregon State tonight. And
you don't think Corvallis is going to be hopping? Is that what you're trying to say?
I mean, it might be hopping. I'd kind of like to go and watch the culture shock of the Cajuns and the Beavers together for a weekend. But you know, just saying. It's kind of like when LSU went and played Syracuse in football at Syracuse a couple years ago. What that was.
Those people were like, holy shit.
Yeah, what is this?
Pardon my French.
But, I mean, point being, I mean, it's on full display tonight. I mean, it's a national title contender at its stadium's best. And, yeah, those are nights to enjoy and to cherish and, frankly, not take for granted because it's not always been like this and it won't always be like this every single year. So, you know,
no,
have a good time tonight.
Yeah, it's my point. I mean, I know winning is what matters. I'm not stupid. I get it. But enjoy the moment a little bit because there's no guarantee that you have these all the time. They're hard to come by.
And I get what everybody's saying. I understand what they mean, and maybe he is dazzling tonight. But to say that the environment won't have any emotional impact on Miller Hogan is completely wrong. He's going to be – might be it amps him up, but it's going to do something to him tonight. He's never pitched in front of more than 1,200 people.
So he's human.
Yes,
he's human. Got a heart.
Yes.
Got adrenaline.
Yes.
Has emotions.
Yes.
Experiences feelings.
Yes, his synapses fire, I would assume.
Yeah. Come on.
He has nerve endings.
Of course. It's like you hear professional players talk about, yeah, in the playoffs, man, I get nervous as hell.
Yeah, because like several people have said, hey, he will not be bothered at all.
Stop.
He hasn't been in it before. I don't know what he's going to be like. I mean,
you hear professional players who play 162 regular season games a year, right? Walking to the plate is second nature to them. Yet it'll be a NLCS or ALCS game, and they'll say, yeah, before the game I was vomiting in the clubhouse. I was so nervous I couldn't put my pants on. I had to take a deep breath just to calm down enough to put my pants on.
Well, I mean, Rory McIlroy admitted that in the final round of the Masters a month ago, he almost missed the ball on the first tee. He shanked it way right and goes, first tee, you kind of,
Yeah.
You know.
So to say this isn't going to impact this young man is ridiculous. Now, he might rise to it.
He might rise to it. He might be brilliant. But in the first inning, let's say he leaves one up and Fortes hits it 400 feet. He's going to go, oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, he's going to say something else. Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah. He's going to – his ability to calm himself. And their hitters are walking to the plate, and there's a lot of noise. And look, it might impact Ryan Rollison too.
Yeah, of course. Ryan hasn't pitched in this environment before, but he's pitched in things a whole lot closer.
It's the one thing that I think Sunday might help Ole Miss more than even I think is he came in, and it was a little crazy in that sixth inning. LSU had a threat going. I mean, you know, somebody for LSU in that spot, instead of looking at that 0-1 pitch that I'm still trying to figure out what the hell it was, if he instead throws a fastball and someone, you know, crushes it against the left center field wall and 3-run score – well, there weren't many LSU people there. Well, they didn't have a lot to cheer for. You did. It got loud on one side and not the other. That side would have gotten loud.
Yeah, I would assume pregame was pretty lively back and forth.
It was. The league did great. I love to make fun of the SEC and criticize the SEC. They did a fantastic job with that environment. But my point is that he has been in something resembling this environment. But he might get a little amped up tonight. Might take him a couple of hitters to calm down.
Yeah.
Who knows? It's the fun of it, really. When people are just – it's just these are not robots.
Can Tennessee Tech and Missouri State adjust to the environment tonight by watching it and not being in it?
No.
They can't?
No.
So the winner of that game, Ole Miss wins, they're still going to have the same, oh, my God, tomorrow night that they would any other time.
I was at Game 3 of the World Series.
Yeah.
I was in it. I was amped up. Was it the same experience as I would have had if I'd been hitting second? No. It's a different deal when you're in the arena.
Okay.
I mean, they can get a feel for it.
Yeah. I mean, they'll know what to expect.
But they don't know how they'll react. They don't know how it's going to impact them.
And again, Missouri State was in Fayetteville last year. They've seen this.
So that's familiar. Different environment, but it's still loud. And Arkansas has a great crowd.
This is a rockier, more lively environment. Like I've always said, Arkansas feels like a really, really, really good double-A game.
Yeah, it's a great environment. I'm sure they enjoyed it and stuff. But
they
this
do the
is,
whole Call the Hogs thing. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
You know, I like it more than you do. You think it's a little weird. I like the Call the Hogs.
Yeah, I mean.
They got the rally girls on top of the dugouts and all the
they
stuff.
They did have that. Yeah. I noticed them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're called Rally Girls. I don't know. I forget.
I don't remember. I'm now intrigued.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's right.
Hey, don't forget if you're out there, check it on Amazon, YouTube, Spotify. The Moonlight Grahams, their new album is out. You've heard John come on the show and talk about it a little bit. You can download that to your iTunes, Spotify, all those accounts. The Moonlight Grahams is the name of their album. It's a folk contemporary music band that they have some Ole Miss ties. So if you like that kind of music or you want to check them out, do that. We'd appreciate it.
Tough ticket tonight, but it will be a full crowd at Swayze Field again, 6:30 for Ole Miss and St. Louis.
How hard is the ticket?
Pretty tough. I saw some people having, even on StubHub, was having a hard time finding seats, just general admission tickets and things like that online. So
Carson came down. You'll be impressed with this. So Carson knows the draft. I think the draft is Monday.
It is Monday.
He said, "Dad, do you know that the Cubs might take Ryan Rollison?" And I said, "I didn't know you knew who Ryan Rollison was." He said, "He was the guy that Theo was scouting when you were at the tournament." And I said, "Well, you're right. It's true." And I said, "I don't think he's going to fall that far."
It's kind of a bass-ackwards way around it, but all right, we'll give him credit.
Yeah, we were kind of having this conversation. He goes, I said, "I don't really think he's going to fall that far because I think the Cubs pick like 25th.
There's a chance. He's somewhere mid-teens to, at worst, mid-20s. Yeah, somewhere in there.
Well, he had read somewhere. Don't ask me where.
Because I think The Athletic had him all the way down to 29, which was pretty much the absolute baseline.
Let's see. I'm pulling it up now. I know.
You know where he's looking?
Cubs are 24th.
Okay. Yeah, there's a possibility there if he's there. He could be there.
That pick value at 20.
12, 15, 17 are possibilities, and there's a little bit of a tumble after that.
That pick is valued at $2.724 million is the slot.
Okay. That's it? Honestly, I thought it'd be a little higher than that.
Yeah, it starts at the Tigers' first pick
eight
is
and something.
Eight, almost 8.1, not quite 8.1. The Giants' pick is almost 7.5 at 2. Philly goes 3. They're just under 7 million. White Sox, Reds, Mets, Padres, Braves, A's, and Pirates are the top 10 picks. You're like, how'd that come up? I don't know.
Yeah, anyway. But no, it's a tough ticket. I've had a lot of people asking, a lot of people trying to figure out a way to get in tonight. Because, you know, that's the thing. Even in the outfield, you got to have a ticket. I mean, NCAA is a lot different than regular season on how this thing happens. It's why a lot of times the top crowds of all time aren't NCAA tournament games because of the way you pack people in differently in the regular season. So. Good environment. Should be a fun weekend. Ole Miss trying to break their skid in the postseason starting 6:30 tonight. So we'll have coverage at rebelgrove.com, and we'll talk to you on the podcast again on Monday.